We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 168, a Facebook Live and Periscope edition of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Scott, we got Bronx Banner Ale. We're drinking it in Boston, right next to Fenway Park, like we were last Wednesday. I think that's fitting. It's a nice F you to the Red Sox.
Yeah, you know, I'm here for a little while, a temporary guy in Boston, just trying to piss off as many Red Sox fans as I possibly can when I'm going back and forth to the hospital. So it's been an interesting walk. I've talked about that. And yeah, today's episode is brought to you by the Bronx Banner Ale. Everybody knows it. We've been talking about it. Bronx Brewery is a good friend and partner of the show and the website. And if you haven't tried their Bronx Banner Ale, definitely give it a whirl. They are in many, many locations at Yankee Stadium. And if you're staying in, or if you're sitting and watching the game in the bleachers, you can find it at the Master's Pass Batter's Eye. They're pouring it there. And then some of the craft brew stands behind where they do roll call. So definitely give it a whirl. It's a perfect summer beer, perfect for Yankee games. And I know Andrew and I constantly drinking it when we're doing the show.
And it's a nice, that's a nice transition to September 30th, the end of the baseball season. The Yankees are obviously going to be going for the playoffs. At this point, it might be a wild card. We're going to get into all that coming up. But we've got an event September 30th. It's a 4 p.m. game right now against the Blue Jays that may or may not be flexed to a later time. I'm thinking it might get flexed if that has playoff implications, which right. You and I are pretty confident it's going to have playoff implications. But we've got a great deal for people.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to have playoff implications. There's no doubt about it, because I'm willing it to happen, because it's going to either determine seed. It's going to determine whether we make it in or not. It's going to go down to that. I mean, the way that we have been used to Yankee baseball for the past 2 to 3 years, you know damn well it's happening.
It'll be nice and torturous.
All right, so the deal is, we got a $59 deal, which gives you a ticket to the game in either section 205 and 206, which are the furthest to the left on the second deck in right field behind Aaron Judge. Great seats. The retail value, the face value of these tickets, I think is $64, something like that. So you're actually getting a deal cheaper than that. It's a game ticket. You're getting an event tee that will be released probably tonight, maybe tomorrow. And then we're doing a pregame party at the Bronx Brewery with Bronx Banner Ale, as we have talked about many times on the show. You get 2 free pints, 16-ounce pints at the brewery. And then we have a deal for everybody coming from Bronx Pinstripes, $4 pints of Bronx Banner Ale until the end of it. We're going to end it probably at 3 o'clock just so people can get over to the stadium and get in their seats. But September 30th, it's against the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are probably not going to be in it, although you never know.
They're going to be playing spoiler. Because remember that how the Yankees and Blue Jays rivalry heated back up about a year and a half, 2 years ago, when the Blue Jays were relevant again for the first time since Al Leiter was pitching for them?
Right.
Yeah.
Joe Carter.
Yeah, a bunch of a-hole Canadians are going to come down and try and ruin the Yankees' good time. And we're not going to let them.
See, I disagree with the fans. I mean, when we went, I went to a Blue Jay game at Yankee Stadium, and there were way too many fans sitting in the bleachers. I don't think they're going to travel this time. I think at this point they've hidden their hats. Their hats are either in the trash.
They already purchased the tickets.
Or their jerseys are sitting underneath their hockey jerseys. So
Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it's not going to be a big contingent, I don't think.
If any Canadians are watching, the event on the 30th is open to Canadian fans as well.
Yes, but don't come sit with us, because that's not for you. No, this is all Yankee fans.
You also know if you've
ever... But Canadian Yankee fans, I know we have many.
You also know if you've ever pre-gamed a Yankee game in the Bronx that you can't get a $4 pint anywhere. It's more like $9 pints. So yeah. $4, in addition to the 2 free beers, is a hell of a deal. You can get a nice buzz on for the game for a pretty cheap bargain.
16 ounces,
that goes a long way.
I just went to Fenway, could only get a 12-ounce beer. Couldn't find a 16-ounce beer. Apparently they exist, but they're like a white elephant or a white buffalo, whatever the rare thing is. Can't find it.
Before we get into everything, we also have an interesting story about this microphone I'm talking into.
Yes.
So Scott overnighted it yesterday.
Yes.
And it arrived about 24 hours later.
Yes.
But about an hour and 45 minutes after we said we were going to do a Facebook Live.
That's.
So we were setting up. We were going to just use the one.
You were pretty aggressive with 5 o'clock, though, by the way.
I said 5:26.
Yeah. Pretty aggressive.
We were setting up the one microphone, and then Scott looks out the window and is like, the UPS guy's here. I'm running down. I'm like, shit. Well, I guess we got a delay. I put out a little video. So that's the setup right now for us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm the anal retentive one for audio quality. Now we have both the same microphones, which is very exciting because now we'll be on for every show from here on. We will have the same microphone, and yes, that to me is very exciting. So Dom will appreciate that for doing the audio editing as well as I do the editing with him. So that's good things, and your ears will definitely appreciate it as well because it's going to be better sound quality. So we're always just trying to make things better.
Always improving. Nice. That's the name of the game.
Salud.
Cheers. So Yankees had an off day on Monday for the first time since August 7th, which is a long ass time, and they only have two more off days the rest of the way.
Yep.
Their schedule is brutal. I think after the All-Star break, I saw Buster Olney tweet that they play the most games in the second half. So it's not going to be easy on the Yankees. And thanks to a makeup game against Kansas City, only two off days in the month of September when you're going for a playoff spot, when you have a rotation with Sabathia and Tanaka in it, who can use some extra days off, that's going to be pretty tough. That's a tough month.
It's definitely going to be tough on the pitching staff, specifically the rotation. When you're talking about the bullpen, it seems like if they don't play like they did in Boston, they're actually built for situations like that where they have multiple guys right that they can rely on to you know, pitch late in games and get quality outs. The other thing that I think plays to the Yankees' favor with a busy schedule in September is that there is a lot of depth within the playoff or within the position players, and a lot of guys are coming back healthy right now. We have like 18 first basemen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are potentially MVP candidates.
See, I'm
some of them are coming from over from a trade that everybody thought he'd only hit home runs in Colorado, was only good in Colorado. He's injured right now, but potentially
hamstring
could be that
injury. He's used to the thin air in Colorado. His hamstrings couldn't handle the dense air of New York City.
Hey, that was not discussed. All that was discussed is this guy's power numbers and the fact that he hit for average, which I still didn't get why that would really be right affected too much in the Colorado thin air. But anyway, the bottom line is we have a multitude of first basemen who can actually come and help the team.
I'm officially out of the predicting MVP game.
That's probably a good thing for
probably
everybody
a good
involved.
Thing, right? Greg Bird's having a hell of a rehab though. He's hitting 500, two home runs.
Kind of like spring training, right?
Spring training Greg Bird is back. Yeah. We had Tanaka going last night, looked like spring training Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
Castro has
difference is that Tanaka did it in a big league uniform.
Debatable. We have Castro who's also having a decent rehab. One guy not having a good rehab is Matt Holliday, who
he's still in Tampa, right?
In Tampa and doesn't have a hit as of yesterday.
Yeah, something's going on with him. There's a reason he's in Tampa. He's working at those facility down there for a reason.
Right. We're getting a lot of guys back. I'm not holding my breath for Matt Holliday.
No, not at this point. At this point, something's going on, and it doesn't seem like the Yankees have put their finger on it. I mean, ever since the disease that he got in Oakland when
was
Billy
it
Bean
mono?
Was, when
someone tweeted me
Billy
saying
Bean
it was
poisoned
mono.
A rat. The rat went into the clubhouse.
Right.
The clubhouse poisoned Matt Holliday. That's the only explanation.
Yes.
The only reasonable explanation.
Was it actually mono, though? Because someone tweeted me saying he had mono. But I don't ever remember seeing it being mono.
I have no idea. I mean, 95% of things on Twitter are fake, so I have no idea.
That high?
Pretty high.
Damn. On the off day, Judge went to the baseball lab in Irvine, Michigan. I was actually watching the Detroit broadcast last night, and they showed footage of it. He was there, I guess, with Marcus Thames and Alan Cockerell, working on his swing. He was doing some tee work on his off day. Everyone else was staring up at the eclipse. Aaron Judge was in the baseball lab.
Gotta love it, right? Gotta love it. Does Derek Jeter have anything to do with the, is it close to Kalamazoo? I have no idea about the geography.
Derek Jeter is only concerned about getting that ugly-ass statue out of center field at Moreland Park.
Look, I like that he's working on it. Obviously, he knows that something's going on. He obviously wants to correct it. And the fact that he's working on this stuff in a very obscure place on his off day is good news. I mean, the guy has a really good work ethic. I don't think that's ever been in question. He's going through struggles. There's no doubt about it. And obviously he wants to be out of it. So like anybody who would want to be out of struggles, this guy's putting in the work. So
I was looking up what the baseball lab was. And it's like instructional baseball for kids. Like they had like kids playing T-ball on their website. And I know you and I were talking before this. I went to one of those as a kid. I went to the Sam Horn Forum. It's a really difficult phrasing.
Yeah,
I don't know why Sam Horn chose that. But Sam Horn was a Red Sox player. I grew up in Rhode Island, so that's why that was. And you went to one as well, right?
Yeah, it was called In the Swing. It was in, I think it's gone. It may still be there. I'm not sure. But it's in Waldwick, New Jersey. And it was Roy White, who had a 15-year career from the 60s into the maybe early 80s. on the Yankees. So
imagine you're like a 9-year-old.
Personal instructions.
Imagine you're a 9-year-old kid working on your infield practice, and in walks Aaron Judge on a random ass Monday.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you're a fan of.
Right. But Judge was doing work. He had 3 walks on Tuesday and a single. Girardi pulls him. So the strikeout streak is over at 37 games. 37 games is now the new record. It's going to go up there with DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak.
I thought I saw somewhere that it tied a record. Although I thought he passed the record
Single season record.
Okay.
So I think Dunn also. Was it Carter or Dunn?
No, Dunn. He had passed Dunn.
I think Carter has a double season record. So like ended or like.
Oh, so it goes into the next one.
But which I don't ever count. You can't carry over seasons.
That doesn't make sense.
It's single season record.
That's like carrying over a record. Makes no sense.
You mean like if you have...
like a team record.
Or if it's like, well, I hit 30 home runs last year and 40 home runs this year, so I hit 70 home runs. No.
Or if you go July to July.
It doesn't work that way.
It's just really dumb.
But Judge's streak is over at 37 games. Girardi pulled him. I didn't think he was going to pull him after the 4 at-bats, but he had 4 great at-bats, 3 walks, an RBI single, hit the ball hard to left field.
Yeah.
Gets him out of the game with some positive vibes.
Right.
Him pulling him, it was a 10-run game at that point.
Yeah.
Him pulling him, though, proves it was weighing heavily on Aaron Judge and Girardi's mind.
Totally disagree. What inning was it? I missed the end of that game.
It was like the 7th inning.
Okay. 7th inning on the road.
Or 6th inning. He was going to get up again.
Fine. 6th, 7th inning on the road. Blowout game. Dude needs a day off anyway. Hasn't struck out. Has had some great at-bats. It's an absolute great move by Joe Girardi. And I haven't said that in a very long time. And this has nothing to do with X's and O's on the field. It has to do with getting a guy out, because why the hell would you give him another at-bat just to get that strikeout, just to keep it going? It doesn't mean it was covering. It doesn't mean it was really nagging on Judge. What it does mean is that Girardi, and we know this, and this is almost to a fault at some points, Girardi's got his guys back. And he's like, you know what? 4 at-bats. I'm going to pull you. It's a blowout game. It doesn't matter. I'm going to give you the rest of the night off.
I don't doubt that.
He may have done it even if he had struck out.
Who knows? But I don't doubt the media and fans made a bigger deal of the strikeout streak than Aaron Judge. Like, I think Aaron Judge has accepted the fact that strikeouts is part of his game.
Going to happen.
And if he strikes out once a game but also gets a hit or a home run or a double and drives in runs, I don't care. Like, whatever. He's going to strike out. We understood that going in. But I feel like he didn't earn breaking the streak. Finish the game. It's like when...
He's not breaking a streak. This is the whole thing.
No, this is... ending a streak.
Did you know this thing existed before he was around?
No.
This is not a streak that anybody gives a rat's ass about.
No, it's a streak no one wants.
It's a streak that nobody knows about.
I think he didn't fully earn the streak, ending the streak. It's like if you were batting, if you had the batting title in the last game of the season.
It's nothing like that.
And you go 2-for-2 in your first at-bat, and then your manager pulls you because you know you could only lose it, you can't win it. Or
how many times did DiMaggio not finish a game? How many times did Ripken not finish a game?
I don't think DiMaggio ever didn't. What do you mean?
Like, I guarantee he went. Yeah, I guarantee there was.
That doesn't make sense.
I mean, Gehrig and Ripken. How many times did they not finish a game? Because I know that happened.
I don't know.
I've read things about Gehrig going out there with like a broken finger. They put him out there. He hits and they take him out.
Because you have to get 5 innings.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do. To be an official game, you have to play 5 innings.
No, you don't. You have to have that bat. Oh. For a player? I mean, you're a pitcher.
Can someone fact check us on that, please? Yeah,
that's 100% wrong. You're 100% wrong.
It's also...
You don't need the fact check.
I immediately thought of the old story about when Ted Williams hit 406. And he went out there and it was a doubleheader to end the season. And he had the 400 average. And his manager said, do you want to sit? You're going to end the season at 400. Williams said, no, I'm playing. And he went like 4-for-7 and hit 406.
Yeah. And then Jose Reyes did the exact opposite when he won the batting title with the Mets. They sat him.
Well, Jose Reyes is a bitch.
Yes.
Ted Williams is a Hall of Fame historic player.
Right. This is a record that nobody gives a
shit
about.
Aaron Judge did not go out and fully earn the breaking of the streak. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. It's a completely just ridiculous argument because it doesn't matter at all. I'm just so glad that we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Well, he's going to start a new streak soon.
Fine. We'll talk about it when he gets to 30.
Let's just be clear, like, that neither of us care about Aaron Judge striking out, right? We just want to see him having better at-bats. I saw a stat that his hard contact rate has plummeted in the second half. I don't know if that's due to fatigue. playing a full, he hasn't played this many games. I mean, he's played 98% of the games, I think, that the Yankees have played this season. So he's never like been out there this much.
Yeah.
I also heard Ken Singleton talking about how I don't think specifically the home run derby caused Aaron Judge to struggle, but just the fact that he was the center of attention of Major League Baseball for a week. That weighs on your mind. Like, that's a lot for a rookie 25-year-old kid to handle. All of a sudden, you're the face of baseball at the All-Star game? Like, it might not be anything physical, but just mentally, that could screw with your head.
I could see how things were getting mentally draining for the kid. I mean, first year out there, he has an unreal first half where he doesn't see one slump. That's something we talked about how many times. We're like, when is this guy going to slump? When is this guy going to slump? Everybody knows, especially Susan Waldman and John Sterling, they know that's baseball. It's going to happen. It always does happen. That's and it does. Sport. It does happen. Almost 100% of the time it happens, it'll correct itself. And that's what's happening. Now, you're saying we don't care about the strikeouts. To a point, I don't care about the strikeouts. But the strikeout percentage that we're seeing now is too much.
Yes, I don't care if he strikes out once. I don't want him striking out four times.
But that's important because that's the kind of player he is. He's going to strike out. But he does have to limit those strikeouts. He has to be able to make more contact.
More contact.
The first half guy was not the real Aaron Judge. That was some unreal guy
that was
Superman.
That was a superhuman freak we probably will never see again. What he did in the first half, only a handful of players... I'm not exaggerating. Handful of players in Major League Baseball history are capable of. That's how historic of a first half it was. 330 batting average. Led the league in all the power categories. He was stealing bases. He was playing a tremendous right field. Like, that does not happen.
Yeah.
Hitting 500-foot moonshots. Like, everything on a baseball field you need a guy to do, he was doing.
He did what Gary Sanchez did in the second half of last year, but Gary Sanders did it in like a month.
Whoa.
And Judge did it the entire first
3 months.
Yeah. It was insane. So I think there's, you know, I talk a lot about expectations and managing the expectations. And I think a lot of people, and we tried to temper expectations by not predicting and telling people to back off the 90 home run, the 70 home run predictions after we see what he does in the first half, because he was going to come back down to earth. Now he needs to find that happy medium. He needs to find that happy medium where he's striking out less than 50-40%, you know, if he can sit at 35%, 35-40% in that range,
I think his second half he's at like 48%.
I think his goal should be 35-40%. That would be
still
amazing.
That's still a lot.
But for him, I think that would be.
I think he was 27% in the first half.
Yeah, and that's too.
That's still like leads the league. You realize?
But it's not for him. He's a big dude. You can't keep that compact of a swing for an entire season. You just can't do it. Like, the fact that he had that compact of a swing and was going to right field for as long as he did is amazing. Because he's 6'7", 6'8", and he plays like a guy who's 6'2".
But the problem wasn't just the strikeouts. Like I said, he was making hard contact less often. So yes, he was striking out a lot, but when he did put the ball in play, it was no longer 117-mile-an-hour lasers. It was weak ground balls and pop-ups. So even when he put the ball in play in the first half, it was damage.
Yeah.
And now in the second half, when he puts the ball in play, it's not damage often. It's just an out because he's not hitting the ball as hard. So it's a combination of strikeouts, not making enough contact, not making enough hard contact. I think there's got to be some fatigue. I don't know what percent of why Judge is struggling, but fatigue is playing a factor.
Yeah, I'm sure fatigue is there. And I think it's more mental fatigue than physical fatigue, but there's definitely something mechanical there. We talked about this on the last show and we saw the split screen. I think it was when they were playing the Mets. It's a different batting stance from now than what he had in the first half.
So fixable.
It's just weird why there is such a big difference. Because when you see the two, it's a glaring difference. He's wide open right now compared to the first half where he was a lot more closed off. And to me, when you're closed off, you can go the other way a lot easier. You can block off the inside of the plate and go the other way. Whereas you're wide open, it looks like you're trying to hit the ball. You're trying to pull the ball. And going the opposite way is a lot harder to do when you're wide open.
Yeah. One guy who does not get fatigued in the month of August is Gary Sanchez. Continues to go on a tear. Two more home runs.
He waits until August.
Two more home runs on Tuesday night. 493-foot moon blast in the first inning. Longest at Comerica Park. History by like 20 feet. Second longest of the season behind Judge. 495 feet. I heard Meredith tweeted after the game a great quote from Judge. He goes, yeah, I told Gary I still have him by 2 feet.
I love it. I love it. I like that these two guys have that little bit. And we saw that earlier with Gardner and Holiday joking about the distance or the amount of home runs that they're hitting. I love that little internal competition. Even if it is just joking, I think it's good stuff. It just, it, you know, it builds on the chemistry in the clubhouse. But these two guys have some serious power. So
we have not seen Gary and Judge
at the same time.
At the same time.
No, we haven't. It's crazy. And I feel like we predicted this. I mean, if you're looking at what happened in the first half and seeing how Gary Sanchez is playing, I mean, he was hurt for a little while too. You're almost like, okay, they're probably going to flip scripts in the second half. It was, I feel like it was one of the more predictable things to think about for what the season was going to happen. And it's happening. So it's weird for a catcher because usually catchers fatigue
exactly
later in the season.
Like,
but that's because he doesn't try very hard.
Classic Posada was put up all-star numbers in the first half, kind of fade down the stretch. I mean, I'm not criticizing Posada. Jorge was one of my favorite players of all time. But he would always kind of fade a little bit in the second half, but it's understandable if you're catching all those games. But yeah, like, we have not seen peak Gary Sanchez and peak Aaron Judge at the same time. And when that happens, the league is screwed.
Yeah.
Absolutely screwed, because these are two of the most dangerous hitters in the game. I had I have a coworker who's a Red Sox fan, after the weekend series, come up to me and said, would you trade straight up Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge for Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi?
Yeah.
And I said no, because I think Gary Sanchez is potentially the best player or most valuable player of the four, because he's a catcher.
Right.
And if he can put up elite offensive numbers as a catcher and be that guy we saw in the second half defensively last year, he's still throwing out a ton of runners. I guess pitchers are okay calling, like, with him calling the game. Like, there's really the trend when he first came back, I know people were saying, oh, the team was better with Romine, but I think that trend has flattened.
Well, especially if you go back to last season, it didn't make sense because it was opposite.
The main issue is his blocking. If he can just make his blocking average, I think he's potentially one of the most valuable players in the league as a catcher who can put up elite offensive numbers. Like, that doesn't happen. So I said no on the deal, although I would probably rank the players who I would want going forward: Sanchez, Betts, Benintendi, Judge.
Yeah, I don't want anything to do with Benintendi because I think he's a little bitch. My hatred to
don't let
guys,
your feelings get in the way.
No, well, they will get in the way. They're getting in the way. They're getting in the way. I don't want those two players. I do admire the way that Mookie Betts plays the game. I like the way he plays the game. I think he's a hard-nosed dude. He's a smart baseball player. Benintendi, I just don't like looking at him at all. I think he's a little bitch. He's going to be the guy that I'm going to hate for a long time. I want nothing to do with him. And Aaron Judge is freaking Derek Jeter reincarnated as far as a man talking. I love that part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to figure it out. I think he's smart enough, and I think he's good enough to figure it out. And Gary Sanchez as well. While I don't think he's going to be the long-term catcher for the Yankees, that my gut feeling is that he's going to be a DH at some point, probably within the next 5 years, because I think this catching is going to catch up to him. I think the Yankees at some point are going to realize what a dominant bat he is from the right side, and they're going to say it's not worth it because what we're trying to do is fix him defensively, yet he still has this unbelievable power, unbelievable way to hit the ball on the offensive side, and they're just going to scratch it.
So the thing is, it's like you think of, I said Sanchez is an elite offensive player. He's not an elite offensive player for a catcher. He's an elite offensive player, period,
right,
in baseball. Like, you have Posada was an elite offensive catcher.
Yes.
Gary Sanchez is like, could be the best hitter in baseball. That's the type of like talent he is offensively. That's different. That's like next level.
And that's exactly why I think when you see the deficiencies as a catcher defensively, when you're not getting down, when you're not framing pitches well, when you're going out to talk to the freaking pitcher 5,000 times, like, that stuff's going to get very old very fast.
But if he's DHing, even though he's still very valuable, he's not nearly as valuable if he's playing.
Well, it depends what you have at catcher. It honestly depends on what you have at catcher at that point too. Right. If you have, like, a guy who can play the position, is a good defensive catcher, and can adequately handle a bat, then, you know, it depends on personnel. There's no doubt about it. I just don't think they want to risk him long term.
Well,
for losing the bat due to him catching,
due to
a knee injury, due to fatigue in the hips. I mean, we saw what happened with Posada. When he broke down, he was a shell of himself at the end. He started breaking down fast.
He break down until late 30s. Like, what do you mean long term? Because Sanchez is 24, 25 years old right now.
Yeah.
Do you mean long term, like, when he's 29, or long term when he's 34? Because that's a different story. Like, I still think he's the catcher for the Yankees for the next few seasons.
I just think that it depends on what happens personnel wise. And I think sooner rather than later, I'd say 5 years. I could say 5 years around the 30 mark. He's going to become a DH.
If you get 5 or 6 seasons of Gary Sanchez catching, and then he moves to DH, maybe partial first base, like that's fine.
I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm not saying there's anything bad with it. I'm just saying that that's
not that there's anything wrong.
Not that
with
there's
that.
Anything wrong with that. But that's to me, that's the direction of the move.
Yeah,
they're gonna save him. They're gonna save his life. Do you see how conservative they are with pitchers nowadays? You don't. I know that that is going to come into play with Gary Sanchez and his legs as a catcher, especially if we don't see the defensive deficiencies improve. That's the biggest hindrance. Yeah. If he gets better like that and he really does improve the blocking and all these things around it, maybe they'll keep him longer, but I still think even if that is good, they're going to push him.
I might say the blocking could be due to also fatigue, similar to how Judge isn't used to a full season, Sanchez isn't used to a full season, but he's raking at the plate. So,
and he doesn't...
You're only fatigued when you're crouching behind the plate, but not when you're batting? Like... You can't have both.
Yeah, I mean, people were talking about injuries too. You're only injured when you're catching and yeah. when you're trying to run to first base on a lazy ground ball, but you can mash no problem.
Speaking of injuries, Tanaka came off the DL
from a what? From a dead arm.
From a dead arm,
thank
tired
you.
Arm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for admitting that.
That's what I said from the beginning. I'm saying I'm not getting back into this.
It was down the arm.
It was finally though we saw a game that it wasn't stressful, right? The Yankees offense was on fire. Tanaka gave them 7 innings, 3 runs. He made a couple mistakes, but you can almost attribute that to he's pitching in a 10-run ball game. He's not going to walk somebody, so he's just going to throw strikes.
Well, even when Tanaka's on, that's what he does at the end of games. He grooves strikes.
He hung a couple sliders, one to Kinsler, one to Castellanos. Kinsler hit an RBI double, Castellanos a 2-run homer. I don't want to give Tanaka too much credit because Detroit's lineup, especially with a struggling Miguel Cabrera, JD Martinez is in Arizona. That's not the same Detroit
Justin Upton's
lineup.
Having a great year.
Justin Upton's having a good year. And, like, you got Kinsler, who's a good hitter. Like, you've got good hitters. But that Detroit team is freaking giving up. So, I don't know how much to attribute Tanaka to he was good and how much to attribute Detroit just sucks.
I mean, you have to give Tanaka credit because he just came back from the disabled list. He came back from a, quote, injury that really wasn't an injury. It was just fatigue. And he proved, one, that he's healthy. Two, that he can go deep into a game, which we're not seeing very often from the Yankees pitching rotation. And to me, that's extremely important. At this point, if the offense, once everybody starts getting back into once Castro comes back, hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that Greg Bird comes back and is a shell of himself.
Knock on wood.
I'm not sure that's real wood. But, they're going to score runs. The runs are going to start coming. Theoretically, you look at the lineup, they got to come, right? So length from the rotation, keeping them in games, to me, is the utmost important. They got to eliminate the blowout games. They got to eliminate the Michael Pineda games, the early Tanaka games where he goes out.
He's out.
The Derek Jeter day Tanaka. That guy can't exist anymore.
Well, we kind of were surprised. We talked about this last week. We were surprised. Like, Tanaka hasn't been that guy since pretty much June.
May 29th, I think those numbers were dating back, right?
I know you're an eye test guy.
I am.
Eye test didn't say that.
Right.
But the stats, his baseball reference page said that.
Yeah, and it was because I think we figured it out as we were talking about it, is that he clusters these good starts, or he had up until then. And he had some really disastrous starts. So when he did that, the numbers get skewed. They get weird when you look at the whole grand scheme. Like people are tweeting out the numbers and like, look, he's not bad. Okay, fine. But he has been very bad on occasion.
But we also have to look at this comparative. Like, let's put this in perspective. Like, Tanaka has been, as much as I shit on him, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball for 3 seasons.
Yes.
And then, like, he totally fell off.
Dare
the
I say
this
more,
year.
More durable as well?
What, more durable the last 3 seasons?
Yeah,
he's pretty durable. He has never not gone on the DL. He has never gone a full season without going on
200
the DL.
Innings last year.
I'm not calling somebody durable if they can't go a whole season without going on the DL.
Name one pitcher that doesn't go on the DL. Name one that hasn't gone on a DL. You can't.
Because
they don't exist.
I'm,
they all go on the DL.
I'm hesitant to say a name on the Yankees because then I'll jinx them and I'll go on the freaking DL.
Well, there's definitely nobody on the Yankees, that's for sure.
Severino hasn't been on the DL.
There's nobody that has a track record. There's nobody in Major League. I mean, your number one ace guy that you always refer to is Clayton Kershaw. That dude's on the DL every other day.
This last couple years. So whatever. This, you got me really derailed on my point, which was we were comparing Tanaka this year to Tanaka of 14, 15, 16. And it's not even close. Even though he's pitching better, he's still not the same pitcher.
No,
the numbers we were looking at since May 29th is, I think it was 3.99 ERA. That's a 4 ERA. That's not good.
His last nine starts were pretty damn good, though.
Three ERA.
I think it was under three.
It was exactly three. But 3.99 ERA since May 29th is a 4 ERA. 4 ERA is not good. Especially, 4 ERA was great in 1999. Frickin' Roger Clemens won a Cy Young.
It's not a 4, it's a 3.99.
Roger Clemens won a Cy Young with like a 3.99 ERA. But this is... That's not baseball anymore.
There should be an asterisk next to that because he was also on steroids, so it should have been better.
Everybody was on steroids.
I know, but he was too, so it should have been better.
Bring steroids back. Baseball was more fun then.
The bottom line is that I saw a healthy Tanaka. I saw a guy that went seven innings. I saw a guy that gave up three runs, and honestly, those three runs were kind of nonsense because it was a home run at the end of the seventh inning when he's just throwing BBs in there trying to get through it in a blowout game.
No, it was encouraging.
It was encouraging.
He came off the DL after 10 days. They didn't delay him any time. So, yeah, you're right. Maybe But listen to this now.
Now that we're approaching September, we're approaching playoff implication baseball. Like every game from now on pretty much is important, right? I mean, we're looking at it as all important baseball. When you have if Tanaka is truly this guy that we've seen, this 3 ERA guy over the past 9 starts, and then you have Severino, who has turned into a dominant ace, one blip on the radar. Sonny Gray, who gives you quality start after quality start after quality start. That's three guys. Then you throw in CC Sabathia, who came back from a DL, got a cortisone shot or whatever he got. He came back with a knee that he couldn't feel, for lack of a better...
Numb that shit up.
Yeah. He pitched very well. That's three guys plus CC who are pitching well right now. And that's a very good thing going down the stretch. And when you're looking at a short series, talking about the playoffs, if you're able to either get the division and get to it in the first round, or you get this one-game playoff and you're throwing a Severino in there, which we have confidence in, that's a very good thing. With the lineup that we have, to me, the Yankees are built for a short series at this point. And it's a very good sign that these guys are hitting their stride.
The bullpen.
Absolutely.
That's a great transition, though, because I think let's transition to talking about playoffs. We're at that point in the season where it's a playoff hunt at this point.
Yeah.
They kind of screwed themselves the last two weekends against Boston because you and I agree they should have won 2 out of 3 in both of those series.
Yes.
If it weren't for Aroldis Chapman and the bullpen blowing a couple games, you're looking at 2 games back of Boston, not 5. That's different. You're totally different.
Right.
And then with 4 games coming up in Labor Day weekend, I mean, it's game on at that point.
Yeah,
but you're not in that situation right now. So it's going to be tough. The only way they're going to really win the division realistically is if they sweep Boston in Yankee Stadium 4 games,
or if
Boston
500
and
Boston
stumble.
Struggles. Yeah.
So it's going to be tough.
Yeah. They have to bare minimum split.
So we're not giving up on the division. We're just acknowledging it's kind of a long shot.
Like we're being very realistic. With the sense of what's happening in the scape of the American League.
You said it. If the Yankees are playing a wild card game and they have Luis Severino going, you and I are very confident. The Yankees are favored in that game, especially because it should be at home. They control their own destiny to make that wild card game at home. Right now, they're 2.5 up on Minnesota, who is in the second wild card spot. And then there's 3 teams bunched up with Minnesota. You've got the Angels, Mariners, Royals, and actually Rangers too. So 4 more teams. The Yankees play the Twins and Mariners coming up in the next week. I think they play the Mariners in next week. And then the Twins...
The following, or later in September.
So if you beat those two teams, you basically clinch a home wild card game. Severino at home at Yankee Stadium in a wild card game, I'm taking my chances.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think that's a great setup. There's no doubt about it. The Yankees, I can guarantee you, are dead set on trying to or going after that AL East crown. We're seeing all these guys come back. I think over the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a very different Yankees team. And when you start seeing all of these guys return, and it's pretty much the starting lineup out of spring training, plus the additions that we've gotten through trades, right? Really not subtracting anybody because we didn't really give up anybody on the major league roster. We were giving up guys that are, you know, potentially contributing well down the road. But Todd Frazier, who's hitting the ball very well lately, and he seems to have found whatever, you know, his little resurgence. I love that because I do love the guy. I think he's a fun player. And then Greg Bird, to me, at this point, is an X factor. You love calling X factors out, but he really is. He's a big left-handed power bat, and that's something that the Yankees desperately need right now. With the rotation pitching the way that they are, and hopefully they can continue along the way. I wouldn't be surprised if there was another injury between now and then, but I think this lineup can absolutely carry this team into at least the wild card, and I think the number one wild card.
Well, if they don't get the wild, if they're not playing in a wild card game, that's a massive failure.
Agreed. And then we'll start talking about Joe Girardi because that's a problem.
100%. But the teams that are right behind them, none of those teams scare me. The Angels have Mike Trout, and then I don't know how they're winning. Mike Trout's not pitching, so who the hell is pitching for the Angels? But they've been winning.
I legitimately cannot name one starting pitcher. You were completely messing with me the other day, saying that Bartolo Colon. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that Bartolo Colon was on there. Yeah. Well, Chuck, Steve Avery, Chuck, I wouldn't have gotten. Chuck Finley. But Bartolo Colon very well could be on the Angels right now, and I'd have no idea.
Tim Salmon, Troy Gloss, they're all still there. How did you miss this?
Right. Garrett Anderson hitting home runs, batting cleanup. I got you.
Yep.
No, there's still a problem, though, because Mike Trout's there, and Albert Pujols is there, and still hits the ball out of the park, and can steal bases off Dellin Betances with one leg.
But I'm expecting the Angels' wheels to fall off because they have no pitching.
I agree.
You've got Minnesota and the Mariners, who have been very solid teams all season, but if you've got Severino going, you've got Ervin Santana going, who's probably the Twins' ace, and you've got James Paxton, who's probably the Mariners' best pitcher
right now, because
Felix Hernandez is kind of a shell of himself. He's over the hill. He's been in the league since 19 years old.
Yeah,
he's been in the league forever.
So he's got a neck tattoo. Ever since the neck tattoo, downhill.
Right. Him and Carl Crawford went together to get the neck tats.
Ooh, bad move. That was a very bad move.
But if you're talking about Severino up against those guys, I'm confident.
Yeah, and with it's pretty crazy how the Twins are even remotely in this. I mean, they were sellers at the trade deadline.
They traded Jaime Garcia. Did you also see this today that they might ask for retribution on Dedrick Enns because Enns is injured again in his left shoulder? So the
Yankees, but he pitched a game in Minnesota in the major leagues.
But he hasn't done that in the Yankees. They might take the Yankees to small claims court.
Not going
to
get it.
They might sue
Judge Judy is going to say hell no to that because he went and pitched in a Twins major league uniform. Sorry.
Bad. That's what I say. Buyer beware. Once you buy the goods, and they're off my shelf, it's on you.
Yeah, you should do the homework and test the guy out. That's why they have trades that fall through because of physicals.
I derailed you.
I don't even know what the hell I was talking about.
No,
but I think what I was saying is that I'm surprised that the Twins are even remotely in this conversation because they thought that they were going to make a run. Then they lost six in a row. Then they sold. Then they won again. They went on a long streak. So I don't know who they are. Paul Molitor has them. If he's still the manager, this has him playing pretty well at this point.
Third base for them.
He might be for the Twins even, or for the Angels. But they're the pitching for Minnesota. Everybody who we're looking at underneath the Yankees right now in the wild card, all the pitching staffs are below par.
Are you at all worried that the Royals might make a run? They've got the most playoff experience.
I mean, if you're talking about that, but they're a different team as well. I mean, they have. Their entire pitching staff is completely different from when they were. Ian Kennedy.
Imagine if it was Luis Severino versus Ian Kennedy, that ginger. Oh my God. What would be a worst case scenario for the Yankees?
Losing to Ian Kennedy in a one-game at home.
Hold on, let me finish. Losing to Ian Kennedy in a one-game wild card, or losing to the Mariners and Ben Gamel has a huge game against you.
Ian Kennedy, no doubt. Ben Gamel, we knew we were getting rid of a good player. You know, we knew we were getting rid of a player that could be something. It was a roster thing. So I fully expect Ben Gamel to screw us at some point.
Right.
I don't expect Ian Kennedy to screw us.
Let's talk about Severino, though, because we've never really gotten deep into his numbers. But he's been a top five pitcher all season in the American League.
We've talked about his numbers when he was struggling and how he can get better, I think, because I think a lot of the numbers that you're about to talk about correlate with what we've said.
He made the jump you and I questioned if he could make at the beginning of the season. He was competing for a rotation spot in spring training. It's kind of crazy to think about the Yankees. Like, you had Aaron Judge, you had Aaron Hicks, and Luis Severino all competing for roster spots, essentially, in spring training. And they've been three of the most impactful players on the team.
Yeah, no, it's look, the guy from, if you're looking at what happened last year, there were all these conversations about why was Severino struggling when he was starting the games? Why was he dominant when he would come in and throw multiple innings in the bullpen? Like, what was right. the difference? Why was there was something upstairs?
Between the airs.
Absolutely, and I think that was there was some kind of a mindset shift on him, some kind of a build of confidence. Because he's got that right now. You can see the confidence all over his face.
He's got swagger when he walks off the mound. He walks off. He's
That's important. If you're a Major League Baseball player.
Walks off with confidence.
If you're a Major League Baseball player and you are trying to be one of the best pros out there, you got to have that confidence. You got to know that your stuff is going to beat that guy up there. And now I think Severino knows that. And a lot of that goes into the fact that he's really built a full arsenal. Because I don't think he had that full arsenal last year it was still he was still testing out that changeup, didn't have confidence in it, still not throwing the slider with a ton of confidence, still working through these things. It's a young guy working through his pitching selections. And I mean, I'm giving a lot of credit maybe to Pedro Martinez. Is that who we give credit
yes.
to? Because I mean, that's a guy that he was working with in the offseason. You're seeing what Pedro did with different pitches.
The number one comparison when Severino came up to a pitcher was Pedro Martinez.
Yeah.
And don't you remember we talked about 2015, like, no pressure, kid. We're comparing you to Pedro freaking Martinez.
Yeah.
The best pitcher of the 90s.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, arguably the best right-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
He's showing the fact that he can change pitches, and that's the biggest thing. Severino, everybody flashes, just like everybody flashes with the 500-foot bombs that Aaron Judge hits. Everybody flashes with the 100-mile-an-hour-per-hour fastball that he throws, sustained 97.8 or 97.5 or whatever it is. I think it's the highest sustained fastball in the league, right? I believe four-seam fastball. Everybody, those are the eye-popping numbers. Those are the sexy numbers. But the fact that he has established that changeup, the fact that he throws it, and I think we got numbers on that, right? But the fact that he actually just shows it, doesn't need to throw it a ton, but needs to show that he will throw it and has confidence to throw it at any point. He can throw it at any count. That's huge. And he's showing that.
13.2% of the time he's throwing the changeup. That's not a lot. Mm-mm. It's slightly increased over last year, but the biggest change is that it's now a decent changeup.
Yes.
It sucked. Hitters didn't have to worry about it last year. He couldn't throw it for strikes. He would have no confidence in it. So if he got into a tough situation, a hitter knew, this guy's not throwing me a changeup. He has no confidence in this pitch.
Yeah.
So even though he's only throwing it 13% of the time, a hitter in the back of his mind has to say, he might throw me the changeup.
Right.
Also, his slider is probably his most improved pitch. And he's throwing his slider more this year and his fastball less. As we know, his fastball is the fastest in the league, 97 miles an hour average. And he carries that into the 6th, 7th, and 8th inning if he goes that deep into the game.
Rubber arm.
So hitters can't hit a slider. I think they only have a 200 batting average and have only hit 4 home runs off of his slider this season. You got the changeup to worry about. He's a 3-pitch pitcher now. And when you've got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball that can locate, you don't need – I mean, you hear about guys who are 4-pitch pitchers, 5-pitch pitchers. Remember we talked to Joe Stiglitz from Oakland, and he's like Sonny Gray can throw 5 pitches and he can mix and match.
There's not a lot of those guys. And usually, like, they don't throw hard.
Severino at this point in his career does not need to be a 5-pitch pitcher or a 4-pitch pitcher.
Right.
He's a 3-pitch pitcher because his stuff is nasty.
It's similar, actually, if you're looking at a potential comparison, like what CC was early in his career.
Yeah.
CC was throwing off of this, off of
fastball
slider. And I'm not even sure if he had a changeup back in the day. And maybe I'm sure he
changed
something.
So I was rewatching on YouTube. They have like the 09 World Series video. I was rewatching it. And the announcers were talking about how CC has really dedicated himself to his changeup this year.
Yeah.
And that's 2009, his first year with the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah.
So up until that, 08 to 08, he was fastball, slider, occasional curveball.
And it was a different era in the sense that not as many guys were throwing as hard as he was at this point. But now we're seeing everybody doing that. But there's an evolution as a pitcher. You're going to throw harder earlier in your career. Obviously, you're a younger guy. You have a fresher arm. You're able to do that. But the fact that he does have the 3 pitches and now he's got confidence in all 3 of those pitches makes him – you know, the sky's the limit with Severino at this point.
Severino's on the bump tonight. I know the game has already started. You and I are not watching the game right now. Hopefully he's not getting shelled. That would look like the egg on our face if that was
probably
the case.
Probably par for the course, though.
Last topic before we end the podcast, Chapman. The Ringer wrote something about Chapman. basically, the gist of it was that his arm angle is lower this year than it is in years past.
Yeah.
He's still throwing velocity. Surprisingly, this is going to shock you, he's still throwing the same amount of strikes. But his arm angle is lower, and he's getting way less contact. He's getting way more contact. So 10% more contact.
I don't think when you're talking about percentage of strikes, that tells the whole story. It really depends on when those strikes are thrown also.
And where in the strike zone they are.
Yeah. So, I mean, were they thrown while he was behind in the count? Were they thrown on the first two pitches? Because if you're getting ahead of pitchers and you're throwing them early, it's a different story.
Like, I know. Like,
why I have a problem with all the metrics. They don't tell the true story.
First of all, he's going to throw more strikes because hitters are making more contact against him. And if you make contact, that's a strike. And also, if you're set up on the inside corner, Sanchez is set up on the inside corner and the ball leaks over the middle of the plate. Guess what? That's still a strike.
Yeah.
But that's not a good pitch.
Right.
So yeah. It doesn't. I agree. He's not throwing as many good quality strikes.
He's been throwing the slider more often, too, this year. And that was our big thing, I think, with Chapman before he actually got traded. Before Chapman got traded, you and I had this conversation about, well, is this guy going to play later in his career?
Right.
Can this guy actually be a dominant closer once that arm stops throwing 103, 105 miles per hour? Because that's what he's been living on for this entire time. The slider's never been good. He's just shown it. It's never been good. It doesn't have a good bite. It's a terrible pitch. And you're looking at all the major leaguers.
It's just a slower pitch.
It's just not a good pitch. So he's been throwing that more. I think he's trying to work on that. I mean, he's for longevity, he's going to have to. But getting ahead of the count in the count to him, for him, is probably the most important thing. And he's just not doing it.
The Yankees are ruling out any possible injury. So it's not like his lower arm angle because his shoulder is hurting or anything like that.
And this is based off one article. I haven't seen any of this stuff. I don't know.
You've been a little busy.
Yeah, I've been a little busy. I don't know where they... you know, if they're
looking. They had a breakdown. So the ringer,
because that's hard to see sometimes. If it's not clear as day, is when you're looking at Aaron Judge saying that dude's stance is wide open, that dude's stance is closed. Arm angle, you got to look closer at what pitch are they throwing, what's the count. I don't know, there's a lot of different
things. So I appreciate the ringer in the sense like they do break it down, but sometimes it gets way too inside baseball for my mind, and I'm just like,
yeah,
my head's spinning.
Yeah.
They broke down to the nth degree of Chapman's arm angle.
Okay.
It's basically like two or three inches lower.
That's a big difference. 2 to 3 inches?
Well, it's a range.
Okay.
It could be like from where he was in his career up until now in this point.
Interesting. I mean, I like all that stuff. I love talking about mechanics and seeing where guys are because I think that does have a lot to do with it. When you start repeating the same motion over and over again, you're going to see more consistent results.
But arm angle could affect movement.
It could also impact where the batter is picking
seeing
up the ball.
Seeing it and also movement. Like he could, even though he's still throwing at 100, if it's not moving and the batter is picking it up earlier, that's a whole different game.
And add in the fact that the batters are used to seeing now 100 miles an hour in the minor leagues.
Right, but like they were used to seeing it last year and he was fine last year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a different guy out there. It's hard to pinpoint. He sweats a lot. I don't know if that has something to do with it.
But see, let's also
make he didn't sweat in the sixth inning when he was dominant.
Right, it's no pressure in the sixth inning. I think the Yankees can get by if Chapman is not Aroldis Chapman we signed up for. If he's just a middle innings pitcher, they still have Robertson, Betances, Canely, Green, and Warren.
He's not a linchpin. He is not an X factor.
It's crazy that we could say that $86 million closer, our season doesn't ride on that guy. But that's the reality with this bullpen.
David Robertson, that knuckle curve he threw the other night in Boston on a Saturday night when he closed out that game was filthy. Absolutely filthy. Gary Sanchez couldn't block it.
It was so filthy, Yadier Molina would have had difficulty.
It would have stuck to his chest. The beautiful thing about David Robertson, though, is that he has the experience. He has the moxie to go in there and throw. He may let guys on, but that doesn't bother that guy. He can go out there and do it. So knowing that, knowing Girardi, knowing that he has that guy in the back of the bullpen, gives him so many options.
Yep.
Will he do it, though? That, to me, is the biggest question.
I think we're going to see how September plays out.
Yeah.
September is not only a playoff run. The Yankees are going to figure a lot of shit out.
Yeah, they are, which is fascinating because we've played a lot of baseball already.
Yep. All right, that does it for this episode. Again, the Bronx Brewery, Bronx Banner Ale. Go check them out at thebronxbrewery.com/find. You can enter your zip code. You can find out where they're sold. Check them out at Yankee Stadium. We're going to be drinking it at the September 30th event. Those tickets will be on sale
Hopefully tonight, tomorrow, soon. We're waiting on a couple things.
It's a great deal. For $59, you get two free beers and then $4 pints, a t-shirt, and a ticket to a game that's going to have playoff implications. And we're going to be there. So.
And it's all going to be cheaper than what you would buy on Ticketmaster right now.
All right, guys. We'll catch you guys next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Where do you see stats? I looked up...